The public safety director is here. Troy Riggs, how you doing? Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you.
You got Valerie here. Valerie's just here, just keeping an eye on you.
Valerie doesn't let me away from the office very often.
Let me first start out with some of the things in public safety people don't talk a lot about. Animal control and the fire department. How are they doing? Animal control and the fire department.
Doing very well. As you say, a lot of people don't realize that their Department of Public Safety has 8 different divisions. We have 3,200 employees, and our annual budget runs somewhere, and that's because of grants. And grant funding comes in somewhere between $430 and $500 million. So we are 85% of the entire general fund of the city of Indianapolis. Animal care control is part of that. We have a tremendous workforce there. Dan Shackle is overseeing that operation. I have been extremely impressed by our workers. This year, the save rate has increased to 64%, meaning that 64% of the animals they take in are saved. They do not have to be euthanized. That number has increased dramatically. They continue to have to deal with rescues, and they've had some challenges this year. We had 400 rabbits that we took out of a pet store. We had another group, 200 rabbits. Now, I got to tell you.
What do you do with rabbits? Well, I mean, nobody's going to go to animal control and say, hey, can I have 100 rabbits?
Well, I'll tell you what we found out. Okay. We found out, first of all, where do you put 400 rabbits? Mm-hmm. And then when we got 400 rabbits in one location, we soon realized we needed room for 475 rabbits.
Because they're rabbits.
Because they're rabbits. And so what we've done with this last group is we've learned from our past mistakes. We took the 200, separated them by sex,
and now we still
have 200. But believe it or not, we found out during research, a lot of people that wanted to adopt for good reasons, for pets, not for other things that we had some people show up for. And then we had animal rescues around the nation that takes in rabbits. So we were able to get rid of them as well. So when I say our euthanasia is dropping now for that, and we're up to 64% save rate, that's good because we also include those rabbits in that. So we've done a good job trying to increase that. They're also doing some efficiency modeling to save taxpayer dollars. And one of the things they did was they bought new vehicles, 9 different vans that will be able to care for the animals in a different manner, much better for our employees. But at the end of the day, each van gets 14 miles per gallon better than a previous generation. So we're trying to be efficient and effective in all we do. But animal care control would not be animal care control, Amos, without the 20,000 volunteer hours that citizens put in each and every year to clean the kennels, walk the dogs. They do a lot of stuff. They do a lot of cleaning there. And they do that because they care for animals. And
people,
they care
so people
for
could
us.
Volunteer to do that?
People can volunteer to do that. And something that we want to do in all the Department of Public Safety next year, and we would love to have you or someone from the station or some of your listeners to come, as we want to put together a Department of Public Safety Academy where people can come in and learn about all the issues within Department of Public Safety, ask questions from the different chiefs, and then at the end of the year, we're going to have an alumni association and have volunteer work out of that as well.
Our fire department. I know we got the new fire station on 21st Street. Then eventually there will be a new fire station over where the Red Cross is on 10th Street, because the Red Cross is moving down the street where where 1310 started.
Now that I did not know.
See, that's the old where they tore down where the TV station was. That was the home of 1310 AM way, way, way back in the day when it played nothing. It played the Beatles and the Beach Boys.
Well, we are excited about the move to the Red Cross building because it's going to give us a little bit more room. The functionality for it for a fire department and administrative offices is excellent. We need administrative offices. And that property on Mass Ave with station number 7 as well, the credit union, the administrative offices, that's very valuable property. That's a break in the entertainment area there. It's all going to pay for itself. So that's going to work out very well for citizens. It's going to work out great for our fire department. Quite frankly, we're going to look into the future. Are there some savings by, looking at stations and putting those in one central location instead of having 2 stations? Those are things that we're continually looking at with data. But I can tell you the fire department has done a great deal this year. I don't know if citizens recognize this or not, but when I was in Corpus Christi, our fire chief went to a convention in Louisville, Kentucky, which happens to be my hometown. And Chief Sanford was there and some of his staff members for a chief's of the fire department's association meeting. And he came back so impressed with the fire department in Indianapolis and talked about how they have this national reputation for excellence. And so this fire department already has a national reputation. They just – I tell you, they're – the people in the nation look to Indianapolis Fire mm-hmm. for guidance. Mm-hmm. That's the significance of their reputation nationally. As a result, we want to continue to build on that legacy, and they have. So they have been working on fine-tuning what they do, mm-hmm. making sure that they have the best-trained supervisors, administrative staff in the nation. He made sure that everybody the rank of captain and above was trained in Fire Officer 1 and 2 certification. Mm-hmm. Very few departments do that nationally. He looked at the accidents that our vehicles were having as they're out. That costs money. Sometimes people are injured. They want to reduce accidents. They've reduced those substantially through training this year. Mm-hmm. So they continue to do improvement models to save money. That's money we can invest back in the fire department. Our firefighters do a great job each and every day. The other thing is that they're in charge of building, looking at building plans, evaluating them, certifying those, and they wanted to do in building inspections, wanted to increase those this year to make sure that buildings are safer. They had a number in mind. They pretty much doubled the amount. So we're moving in the right direction. So as people see firefighters out and they see the things they respond to in the Richmond Hills explosion, the Belmont right. fire, they're still going about conducting good business practices and trying to do things for the right way.
Have they changed fire inspections so that businesses inspect themselves?
They can, but over just a short time. They can okay. do an inspection of themselves, and firefighters come out at a later time. So we're making sure that citizens can participate in making sure that their buildings are safe and secure.
How sometimes, though, how would a business know? A business, you know, might say, hey, I don't want, you know, Troy Riggs, I don't want your guys to come out here because I got some mess going on. And then they'll just lie to you and say, aha, we're okay.
They can, but there's also the accountability of, we're going to come right back in a year or so. Mm-hmm. So it's keeping them, instead of, here's what usually happens. You have a small business owner, right. and you've got a gap of a few years before you have another inspection. Things happen. They don't know what changes are. Right. And all of a sudden, they're hit with a big bill. Mm. If they can help self-inspect early on.
With a checklist. Like they get a checklist.
Mm-hmm. And they get a checklist. And they can check that off. Okay. We're going to come back around our normal routine anyway. Mm-hmm. But they're going to come back around. And now, instead of us spending so much time at this one place because they have violations, hopefully this has helped them get up to speed. They're ready to go. We can move on to the next building. So at the end of the day, for those good business owners in town, and let's remember, a great majority of them are good business owners, want to make sure they have a safe environment. They take it seriously, and it seemed to be a true success.
What are the challenges for the fire department?
Staffing. Mm-hmm. We talk about police staffing a lot, but I can tell you that fire staffing, to me, is just as important. There is a rule. So if you have a piece of equipment going out, you need 4 people mm-hmm. on that. There are cities that are going to 3. There are cities, quite frankly, that are going to 2 people.
With the 2 on a big truck.
Yeah, and they'll have people show up at the scene. Right. Not a good situation. Puts our firefighters in jeopardy. We are not doing that here in Indianapolis, and mm-hmm. we will not do that here in Indianapolis. But I can tell you that because of the union, the local, mm-hmm. and Wayne Smith, who was president at the time, and now Mike Reeves, mm-hmm. but Mike will tell you, Wayne worked very hard, tirelessly, mm-hmm. working to try to get a federal grant, working with management and union working together, and they got a SAFER grant that pays for 30 firefighters. Hmm. 16, I believe, of those were veterans, okay. which means that they will get a third year paid hmm. in service because they're veterans. So we're getting firefighters for 2 years paid for by the federal government. There's some cost to us, right. but not the full cost. A third year for the veterans. They had enough savings in their own budget to hire an additional 8 firefighters in addition to that 30, and only 4 of those panned out. We ended up with 34 firefighters. They are on the streets today because of the effort of the union, 416 and management working together, and we're trying to get a SAFER grant in the future. Mm-hmm. If we don't get a second grant from the federal government, we are going to have a conversation about having some additional recruit classes that we pay for. If not, our overtime expenses are going to go extremely high because of the minimum staffing model that we have. We need to have additional firefighters in the future. So you'll hear us talking more about that when the budget season rolls around in October, especially if we do not get the additional SAFER grant.
What is the role of the Homeland Security Department in the Department of Public Safety? That's still relatively new. you know, obviously, you know, all kind of cities and counties did Homeland Security after the tragedy of 9/11. What is their mission?
Their mission is really what you used to refer to as emergency management.
Mm-hmm.
That's their mission. Their additional mission now is Homeland Security related issues.
Right.
So if they're tracking information coming from federal government, we have an officer that gets information. They help coordinate that response. But probably where people saw them most, I guess, more into what they were doing day in and day out. Obviously, the Super Bowl, people heard about
right.
them there.
Right.
But if you really want to see what Homeland Security does, look at Richmond Hill's explosion.
Mm-hmm.
You know, within 24 hours, the mayor and I had placed Homeland Security in charge of coordinating activity. Now, remember, under this system, the police chief still runs the police department. Fire chief runs the fire department. In a lot of cities, it's one of those individuals.
Mm-hmm.
He or she would run the emergency operations at that point.
Right.
That doesn't work very well. Mm-hmm. At a Richmond Hills, when you're trying to evacuate people, when you have a major explosion, you have an investigation going on, fire chief and police chief does not have time to worry about the logistics of bringing food and supplies.
No, because they worry about taking care of their guys, ladies doing what they're supposed to be doing.
Exactly. And that's the role that Homeland Security, they provide that overview. And mm-hmm. they did it very well with Richmond Hills,
mm-hmm.
but they're also in charge of planning for every major event.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, the largest one-day sporting event in the world is the 500.
Right.
All the festivals associated with that. They do the pre-planning. It is a very difficult task. It was made even more difficult this year because we had the Boston bombing two weeks before the mini marathon, the largest mini marathon in the nation. They made a lot of changes, significant changes. Now, to show you how well they've done their job this year, not only did they enhance security at every event, and if you were at any event, you saw the enhanced security,
right. mm-hmm.
and there were some things behind the scenes you didn't see at all, but they used new business practices. They used the things that they learned from the past. And believe it or not, they came in, the total cost for all the events last year was about 20% less than it was a year before.
239-1310, 239-1310. You got a question for the Public Safety Director of Indianapolis and Marion County. The lines are open, or you can send us a text message at 37890. Now, if you haven't registered for the text system, the new text system from the Department of Internet at Radio 1, to register, you text the keyword AMOS, A-M-O-S. To 37890, then you get a message back from me, then you're locked in. And then you just keep sending all you do is text to 37890, your regular texting rates apply. Just as you learned from Richmond Hills, will Homeland Security learn from last week?
We will. And one of the things that we're looking at now is having a debrief that will be tomorrow mm-hmm. with the mayor. After we have the debrief with the mayor, we will bring our partners in, our state and federal partners, anybody that associated with us, and especially the sheriff's office. They were a tremendous help during the storm, and we'll look at what we did well. We'll look at ways that we can improve. We do that after every major event. We do it after every 500.
Mm-hmm.
We do it after every mini marathon. Maybe not as robust as this will be because we have so many different people that are involved. And we will sit down and look at what our response was. Was it adequate? Was there something else we could do? Was there a resource that we didn't tap? What issues did we not expect? Whenever you have, and I've been through a couple of these just deep freezes after a storm,
mm-hmm.
they bring some unique challenges, one of which is the effect on your people and right. your staff.
Yeah.
The other is getting people into work because of the deep freeze with the snow. And then the one that really we have to look at is what does it do to our equipment? Especially our emergency equipment. You know, when you get down to 20, 25 below zero, I don't care if it's the actual air temperature or it's wind chill, things start breaking down. What plans and contingencies do you have for that? And I think we got through the storm fairly well on that, but I can see some improvements, and I've asked all of our chiefs to make a list, and we're going to talk about them.
Were there problems with the hybrids? Because, you know, this would have been the first real cold with the hybrid cars, which aren't in the fire department,
right.
and not so much in the patrol cars for police, but you're adding more of those vehicles.
Are. Actually, no. They as long as they can get through on the streets and their front-wheel drive,
right.
I have a hybrid. I drove it for parts of the storm. It was fine.
Mm-hmm.
Now, obviously, when you get 8 inches of snow on the roadway
right.
And it comes down in a hurry, it doesn't have the ground clearance, and nothing's as good as a four-wheel drive. But it is better than actually some of the police cars. The other good thing is they're so much more energy efficient
mm-hmm.
that you're not going to the filling station as much.
Mm-hmm.
So they worked very well. But you bring up a good point. as we try to get away from fossil fuels, mm-hmm. one of the things that we've talked about is plug-in hybrids right. that can run maybe 100 miles on a battery charge, which is fantastic. It could save us a tremendous amount of revenue down the road. We want to make sure that we do not go to an all-electric vehicle right now. Mm-hmm. Having the potential of a plug-in hybrid where you have the benefit of either a combustible engine or the electricity right. is probably the best of both worlds. So if we have problems with getting fuel into our city, and we had some service stations that ran out of gas. Hmm. The one near me ran out of gas.
Yeah.
Then we can always switch to electric. If we can't get electricity, we can always run off the engines. That's why we're not purchasing vehicles that are 100% electricity. We may purchase some of those in the future to run errands, knowing that they will not probably be used during a major issue.
One other thing, and then we'll take a break, and then we'll get to what everybody wants to talk about, and that's law enforcement. One of the things, what day was that when we were talking with Power and Light live on the air, and I didn't realize it, that our chief engineer was out at our transmitter site pouring gasoline into the generator waiting for Power and Light to show up. And Power and Light did not know that a radio station's transmitter site had lost power, which is kind of weird. And then we found out later that not only did Power and Light not realize that, but there was another radio station group of three radio stations. Their power was out at their studios, and Power and Light did not know that. As you all look at that, because broadcasters, we're not on the level at the top of first responders and our medical facilities, but we're not at the bottom either. We're kind of in that second important tier. Why Power and Light, if we report, hey, we got power out of the transmitter, why their computers didn't, like a red light, shine off and say, wait a minute, we got a problem here, or that it even gets to Homeland Security?
That is something that we need to add to our debrief, and I'll tell you why, is that we probably need to give you a number. Or we reach out to make sure that you have power, because one of the ways we get information out is through you
yeah.
and making sure that people have information. A lot of times when power goes out, they go to the radio. Mm-hmm. So let us work on that and figure out a way to communicate. Now, your station and other stations weren't the only ones having those issues. We have 11 towers.
Yeah, what was with that? Because at one point somebody put on Twitter that y'all had lost three towers, and I'm going, how do y'all lose towers and not have
for the same way you did? But we didn't really lose them.
We went off the backup.
We have 11, and we have some very robust systems that go, and they work flawless.
Mm-hmm.
But when the systems go on, they run on diesel.
Right.
So we have to get diesel back to some of these towers in some of our remote locations. We started that process. That is something that worked actually very well.
Mm-hmm.
And what we did was we did that. We talked to the IPL. They got them back up and running fairly quickly. We topped off the tanks of diesel just to make sure.
Yeah.
But no one ever saw a disruption, because Homeland Security and Communication has these redundancies mm-hmm. to make sure that that doesn't affect us. But we need to. But the good news is, with our diesel backup, they'll last for about 72 hours at minimum,
right.
which means we don't have to have somebody out there actually pouring diesel into it continually to keep it running.
239-1310, 239-1310 is afternoon's names. We'll take a break, take your calls and text messages with the Public Safety Director of Marion County, Troy Riggs. All this and more after these. And with the Public Safety Director, we'll start with a text message, and it's about fire department. What is required to become a volunteer firefighter?
Well, we do not have really the volunteer fire departments. We have a professional fire department, and you have to go through a litany of processes. If someone is interested in volunteering their time with the fire department or getting involved with the fire department, learning more mm-hmm. and coming out, we certainly want to make that available to them. And if they just send us an email at dps@indy.gov, that will come to my office, and they will be taken care of.
239-1310, 239-1310. Let me go to the phones. And Anonymous, hi there.
Hey, Mr. Riggs, I'd like to know if I'm a I've got a friend of mine that's an Uber driver. The new company here in Indianapolis has been around like since September. I want to know if my friend wants to know if picking up people in Broad Ripple and around surrounding areas, if they have open containers, isn't that against the law? And also, the way people carry themselves, isn't there a code of conduct that they should carry with the way they act and the way they treat the driver?
Well, for taxis?
Yes.
That's a great question.
Yeah, there is obviously, if somebody's being disruptive, there is all types of charges that can be, and someone calls and goes out. Most of the time, taxis will remove someone from their vehicle. If they refuse to get out, they call us to get involved. But as far as open containers, those are enforced. You should not be walking around the city with an open container, and they can be dealt with. Our police department spends an extraordinary amount of time in the Broad Ripple area, especially on the weekends. I don't think people understand that we have teams of officers that come together. So when we had issues downtown, right. Chief Height personally was out there, and we had teams of officers. What individuals didn't see, though, is that while that was going on, we also had groups of officers in the Castleton Mall area because we were starting to have a few issues. And then after the night progressed and things were going well, a lot of those teams moved to Broad Ripple, and they are citing those individuals. We just recently received some new space in the Broad Ripple area that can be used as a holding area if we have to.
Is that in the garage?
Yes.
In the garage?
Yes.
Okay.
So, you know, that's a flexible space. It can be used. So a lot of attention goes to that. But something that he brought up, too, is just a code of conduct. Because someone is a little mouthy, because someone may be rude, because someone may be obnoxious, doesn't necessarily mean that they're violating the law. Mm-hmm. I mean, that is a societal issue that we're facing all the time. And if you think that officers don't get verbally abused, you'd be surprised if you would spend some time walking through a crowd with an officer and hear some of the things that they endure when they're dealing with people that have been drinking and associated with that. So the code of conduct, I'm right there with him. Mm-hmm. There's just no real way of arresting people or dealing with that because we have freedom of speech. The way we deal with that is we make sure that socially it's not acceptable. Socially, right. It's not acceptable behavior.
Appreciate it. Let me go to MD at 239-1310. Hi there.
Hey, how you doing, Aaron?
I'm fine. What's up?
Yes, I have an issue.
Okay.
On December 3rd of 2013, my son was involved in a car accident. He was T-boned at 21st Girls School Road. He wasn't the driver, but he was T-boned at that area. At the scene, the fire department, Wayne Township Fire Department, dealt with my son in what's considered to be an unprofessional manner. My son complained about some arm pain, and my son instead, I guess because the scene, you know, they were handling certain business, it just seemed like he was being ignored. When he made a phone call to his mother, he was instructed to move over to the curb, but in the process, they're pulling on him and, you know, trying to instruct him to the curb and stuff like that. I guess they informed the IMPD that was on the scene that he was being disruptive. My question to the public safety director is, one, does the fire department or IMPD have any training dealing with youth, like accident scenes? And number two, based upon this event, my son was arrested. He's a minor. He was the only one injured at the incident. He was the only one sent to juvenile at the incident. He wasn't even the driver. The accident report was misplaced. And then when we did get the accident report was misread as he was one of the drivers in the other vehicle. So we had to get that straightened out with that officer. But how do we file a complaint with IMPD and with the fire department on these issues?
All right, let me let the public safety director respond to IMPD, and I'm going to respond because this wasn't you said this was Wayne Township Fire? Because it was 21st and Girls School.
Wayne Township Fire responded.
All right, I'm going to tell you how to deal with Wayne Township Fire because that's not part of the fire department under the Department of Public Safety. That's a separate fire department.
Okay.
I'll cover that. I'm going to let the public safety director deal with IMPD.
Right. If you will call 327-5090, 327-5090, and this is for any of your listeners, Amos, that is my office number. Lori White, who works in the office, will take all your information and have Mr. Reeder from our citizen police complaint office to give you a call and walk through this and see if he can help you out and get some information there. As to what occurred.
327-5090?
Yes, 327-5090. And that way, Ms. White and Mr. Reeder can get some background information and try to look into this a little bit more for you. And we may also have the names of the individuals there from the fire department if you needed those as well.
All right. Now, yes. Wayne Township Fire Department, that's an independent fire department.
Okay.
And they report to a fire chief, and that fire chief reports to the Wayne Township trustee, who is he is an elected official. His name is his name is Andy Harris. His phone number, you ready? You ready?
Hello?
His phone number is 241 4191.
4191.
What side of town do you live on?
I live, I just recently moved into the Avon area, but at the time of the incident, we're right there off of Country Club Road, 21st and Country Club.
Well, you're still an honorary Wayne Township trustee, Wayne Township resident.
Exactly.
So you need to let Andy here. Andy's good people, but you need to let him know that his fire department left much to be desired. Okay.
You got that right.
All right.
You said the number again was 241-4190.
4191.
4191.
Yep.
All right, then. And thank you very much, both gentlemen.
All right, you're quite
thank
welcome.
You. Now, he also mentioned training,
yeah.
And I can tell you that police officers. And not just in Indianapolis, but here too, and more so because we're a large metropolitan area. But police officers nationally are some of the best trained individuals anywhere in the world.
Mm-hmm.
They receive recertification training every year. They're constantly getting updates and memos, how to deal with people, how to deal with young people. And I can assure you they've been trained very well. The other thing is I can also assure you is they are not going to put someone under arrest based on information they receive from someone else. So if a firefighter said this person needs to go to jail, that police officer has to see something, has to be present, has to be able to articulate on his own while he or she has put somebody in jail.
But sometimes if the caller is correct and the accident report wasn't completely as happened, then, you know, and we all know we're human, we all make mistakes, does the citizens, you know, who do they say, hey, y'all made a mistake in the accident, you have some, my person is the driver, he was nowhere near the car.
That's why we need them to call us,
okay.
Let us look into it,
mm-hmm.
And a lot of times what we find out is it was an honest mistake.
Mm-hmm.
If it wasn't an honest mistake, then I can tell you for sure, because I've seen Chief Hyde do it, he will deal with it.
Right.
If it were an honest mistake, it'll still be dealt with, but it'll be dealt with through training,
mm-hmm.
remedial type instructions to try to make sure that it doesn't happen to someone else. You know, I was in an accident years ago, and it was checked off that I had been drinking.
Mm-hmm.
I don't drink at all.
Mm-hmm.
And there was no sign there. The guy just made a mistake, and they had to go back and fix it and talk to the officer. He said, no, he was not drinking, it was a one-car accident. I
mm-hmm.
actually ran off the road,
mm-hmm.
but I wasn't intoxicated whatsoever,
right.
And they knew that. But somebody just made a human error mistake,
mm-hmm.
and it was taken care of.
Let me go to Georgia, 239-1310. Hi, Georgia.
Hey, bro, Brown.
Yes.
Hey, Mr. Riggs.
Yes, sir.
How you doing there, bro?
I'm doing well, sir.
Hey, I think you and Police Chief Height, I think both of y'all are two honorable men.
Well, thank you
really
for that.
I really do. Now, there's one thing I want you to do for me, Rick.
Okay.
I want you to tell Greg Ballard he can go on up to New Jersey and help Chris Christie out.
You want to help Chris Christie out? I don't know whether Chris Christie would want that, but anyway, I appreciate it. Let me go to Going Slow at 239-1310. Hi, Going.
Yeah, hey.
Yes.
Hey,
yes.
Got two questions.
Yes.
For the public safety director.
He's right here.
Okay, I'm on 465. I'm heading east, and I get passed by two policemen. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
One's doing at least 70 because he blows past me. The other one's going a little bit slower because I can see the car seat and the baby in the back, and he blows past me. Who regulates whether a policeman gets a ticket or not?
And you are doing 55.
I'm doing 55, and they blow past me. And it's not uncommon. I mean, if the news was to sit on 465 with a camera and videotape how many police officers, whether they're sheriff, whether they're IMPD, whether they're undercover, whether they're in a SUV like Fisher's drives, or a truck like the state drives, how many police cars are violating the speed limit when they're not on duty? Who regulates that?
You know, that sounds question. Like a February sweeps piece for the TV stations.
And you know what? That has been a February sweeps piece in some other cities I've worked. I will tell you who regulates that is the administration of the police departments. When they receive complaints, one of the most frequent complaints is someone that is speeding. I can tell you that officers are supposed to obey the law. They're supposed to do the speed limit. If they are violating that and found, they will be held accountable. But I can also tell you, and I'm just being brutally honest, there's not an officer that I know of that's going to pull another officer over and write them a ticket. That's why we have to have a strong review process and a group of individuals that monitor that and the chiefs that handle that appropriately. Now, in the future, with the way technology is going, and some of these complaints regarding police officers speeding will probably be a thing in the past, and I'll tell you why. With the technology that will be going in the cars, the body cameras that will be going on officers and all that, everything they do will be monitored in the future. Speed will be monitored. You'll see what they see as they're making decisions. So that is something that will be going on in the future that we'll see more and more of that will take care of some of that. Do officers speed occasionally when they're off duty? Absolutely. I understand that. How do you handle that? You handle it through the appropriate channels. You call someone and have the chief or someone of command sit down and have a conversation with them, and you take those steps. That's the way you handle it. Now, if you have someone's habitual offender, chiefs will handle that as well. There's also the case where you have an officer that may be a few blocks away from an event, and they are responding, and maybe they don't have lights and siren on because it's a robbery, and the adrenaline and stuff, and they're trying to get there. We've had cases where people have called about that to find out that the officer is trying to get somewhere because someone's being assaulted severely. That still does not negate the fact that they shouldn't be speeding. They should still be doing the speed limit or use lights and siren. But in the real world, when you're around the corner, and I'm a police officer, I grew up as a police officer, you do those things because you care
about
people.
Because you think, I'm a block away, why do the light and siren? Boom.
I don't want them to know I'm coming, but I want to get there.
Mm-hmm.
And understand that. But you run the risk as an officer when you do that, and you take that risk upon yourself. But what you're talking about, I in no way think they were probably going on a run. They were probably getting somewhere in a hurry, and those things need to be addressed, whether it's us or state. We'll take that seriously.
Are you also saying that the technology, that in my smartphone, when I turn on the GPS, it knows the speed limits? I haven't figured it out yet. Of the roads I'm driving on, and if I speed, the phone will start beeping at me to tell me that I'm over the speed limit. That technology is probably available to some departments?
That technology will be available and probably will be embedded in the computers or the tablets that officers use on a day-to-day basis. I know in some cities they have in their computer, if you're doing anything like 10-plus over the speed limit, then it sends an alert. And a lot of times when it's 10 over, they have lights and siren on. But officers know that. So they may be going 8 or 9, but they're not hitting 10. It's an accountability factor. That's happening in more and more cities. We're introducing a new computer-aided dispatch system, record management system, and we're looking at new computers and possibly tablets for the car, and all that will be possible in the near future.
You say the officers will be doing going slow for the call, that you're doing, they'll be doing more reports or changing the report system. Will that mean more reports?
Yes, it could. And not only that, as Chief Height and I have had this discussion, and we are going to make a big push in 2014 for people to report crime. And we have a report that the Police Foundation out of Washington, D.C. did, and they compared a year in the 1960s to, I believe, 2009.
Right.
And people reporting crime is pretty much the same.
Mm-hmm.
And they speculate in this report, and I'll get Al to send you a copy of it.
Mm-hmm.
They speculate that people underreport crime in the United States by 50%, 30 to 50%. I know they underreport in Indianapolis because I hear from people. We want to make sure that, one, with our new system, we'll capture more crime data. We want people to give us more crime data. So we're looking at online reporting as a possibility. Telephone reporting services as a possibility. Chief Height's using data-driven analysis to figure out where he needs to put people. If you're not reporting crime, we don't know about it. So therefore, Chief Height and his staff can't go about fixing it.
Speaking of reporting, when I look at the neighborhoods in this city with high levels of poverty, to some degree, I bet if I overlay that on Chief Heights' map of where trouble is, they intersect, they overlap. The neighborhoods that have the highest percentage of youth in poverty, I think they also overlook. How important is it taking that data as well?
It is extremely important, and quite frankly, Amos, that's one of the reasons why the mayor brought me here. That's the primary reason. Had a history of putting data together to make good, sound decision-making for government, and we like to refer to it as intelligence-led government, meaning that we take all this data that you're talking about, the things that you speculated about on your radio station for years, the things that we've talked about for years. What have we done about it in American cities? And we've put programs in, we've put seed money in, we've done all this. But at the end of the day, all that goes away and we're right back to where we were. We need to start looking at how we can deal with these issues holistically as a government. So with our new CAD and RMS system, which is computer-aided dispatch and record management, what that basically means to those of us that understand how all that technology works, but we know how we like things on computers, what that basically means is that citizens, by the end of this year, will be able to go on their computer on safetown.org, and they'll be able to see all the crime that has occurred in their community within the last 8 hours. That's how fast of a turnaround. They'll be able to search for a block. They'll be able to search for a district. They'll be able to search for a few streets. It'll be up to them. They can do their own analysis of what's going on. The police department officers will have that in the car. The information we will be able to provide our officers and the public by the end of this year is information used to take me a day and a half as an officer to get. That's how powerful this is. Now, this system is a $15 million system. It is robust enough to include animal care control issues, poverty issues, quality of life issues, crime issues, all of that together. So that by the first of 2015, the mayor, I believe, will be the only mayor in the nation to be able to walk into one room and see crime data, fire data, EMS data, and quality of life data all together and make decisions based on that, and it'll be open to the public. Now, let me give you two examples of why that's important right now in Indianapolis. In one of our highest zip codes with crime, the chief was talking about staff meeting. Animal Care Control went back and said, if they're having these crime problems, and the director is correct, let's see what kind of issues we're having. They ran their reports from January through July in this one zip code in our community. It was single-spaced, about 10 font, 178 pages of runs from animal control.
Animal runs?
Of animal control runs. Now, think if you overlay code enforcement. And so now, if you've got police, animal care control, code enforcement going in together, then that's important. The other issue that we have to have a community conversation. We are at the beginning of what could be a national epidemic. You remember, and I remember, the crack cocaine epidemic.
Right.
We've got another one coming, not crack cocaine, but heroin.
Wait. You're trying to tell me I need to go back and get the old James Brown record, King Heroin?
I'm telling
King
you,
heroin
you, better
is
dust it, you better dust it
I
off.
I need to, because you remember, see? He's of the age, he remembers that song.
Yeah, well, I was a big James Brown fan. I could never move like that, but I was a big James Brown fan.
you're serious.
I am serious. And what we're seeing is young people are using it, and guess who else is using it? 50 and over are using heroin because they can't get the prescriptions they used to get through the pharmacy where they were abusing the pills. Now, we had 95 people at minimum. This is a low number. We know it's a low number. Right. EMS is tabulating this data for us and giving it to the police department. This new partnership we're working on. 95 people lost their lives last year due to heroin overdose in this city. 2 years ago, you talked about heroin to some of our narcotics people. They saw a little bit of it. Now they see a lot of it, and they're seeing black tar heroin that comes out of Mexico. We are seeing issues. The state of Vermont.
Yeah.
You don't think much of Vermont?
The
governor of the state of Vermont gave his state of the state address. The only thing he talked about, the dangers of heroin to their state.
Heroin.
There ain't no
black folks in Vermont, so that can't. It ain't us in Vermont.
Let me tell you, this is the crack cocaine epidemic hit the African American communities very hard. The methamphetamine epidemic
hit the white communities.
Heroin has no racial boundaries.
They don't care. King Heroin don't care.
Don't care.
They gonna make me go in my garage and try to and find that James Brown CD of King Heroin. 239-1310. 239-1310. See the things we're learning? We'll be back with our meeting moments with the Public Safety Director Troy Riggs after this. Tomorrow we're down at the legislature. I know they don't know anything about heroin at the legislature because they're talking about a whole bunch of other mess, and we'll be talking about that as well. Oh, the governor, State of the State message, 7 o'clock, channels 6, 8, 13, public television and radio. Fox 59 says you got to watch Modern Family. It's After News with Amos after these. And we got a text message at 37890. Wants to know, where's the homeland base that was located? What's happening at the Shadeland location? So that's homeland. Y'all back in the Rock Center while this thing is being prepped for a HBO movie of the week?
No, we are not back in. We have been working to try to get an agreement. Well, actually, our legal team has been working on that. You've been there, and you get a and thank you for doing a broadcast from there. That went over well for us. I'm not about sure with you.
Well,
but
I didn't have to wear the hard hat. So
no, and you know the building and the building's very nice inside, and I think that's what's gotten lost here. We want to be back in the building.
Mm-hmm.
We think it's set up that it's operationally very sound. As I was getting here as the public safety director, I was a little concerned about some of the things that hadn't been completed on the building.
Right,
a lot of it was cosmetic and. There was a lot of concern, and I know what happened. A lot of people moved in. We had Super Bowl coming. We needed a place. I get that. But I did not realize that work had stopped. We started working with a developer. He started fixing some things. Things are progressing.
Mm-hmm.
And then all of a sudden, I was told early on in the meetings that the building's safe because I wanted to make sure the building was safe for our employees.
Right.
And anytime you do a major renovation, you worry about that. So coming in, not really knowing, just trying to get called up, I was told the building was safe. Then I'm told that maybe some of the inspections had not been completed.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I don't know what the routine was on those, but I said, well, you know what? If there's any question, let's just go back in and make sure that we don't have any safety issues that could endanger life and human beings. So the fire department went in. Code enforcement went in independently. I asked both of them to do it. They didn't know I had to ask the other ones to do it. Well, code enforcement went in, then I asked the fire department to go, and they knew that code enforcement in too. But they both came back and gave us the same report.
Mm.
A report to me and Deputy Director Washington one day that there was, in fact, a couple of things that were missed that could be critical if there were a fire in that building. Now, I got to be honest with you. The chances of a fire like that occurring are pretty slim.
Right.
However, I'm the public safety director. I can have people in a building that I'm being told by two different individuals, two different groups, that someone could die that works for me if there's a fire.
Mm-hmm.
The chances of that are slim, but at the end of the day, I can't take that chance. I wouldn't allow anyone else to do that in the city, and we've got to hold ourselves to those same standards. So we moved out, trying to get that fixed. We believe they'll be fixed in the next few months.
Mm-hmm.
We'll be back in that building. It'll be operational again. And hopefully we can put that part behind us.
Let me go to Steve right quick at 239-1310 with the public safety director. Hi, Steve.
Listen, Amos, I don't know if this is 4 a.m. or if I'm switching gears, but I've called the mayor's action line, and I'm trying to find out a place where there's branches and limbs all down over the city because of the blizzard. And they gave me a number to call, and the only places that we can go and deposit these branches is in Whitestown and in Noblesville. Why is not there not a site here in Indianapolis that we can go?
And this is tree branches?
Yes, sir. You know, the branches are falling down from the tree branches, yes.
Why wouldn't they go to the city dump?
You go to the dump, they don't charge you on the leg.
To the city dump?
Yes, sir.
And they told you to take them for free, you got to go to where?
Well, they're not for free. It's $10 to deposit, but it's Whitestown and Noblesville are the only sites.
For tree branches. I don't think that's true.
Right.
I thought there's a dump down on off of Kentucky Avenue.
Yes, there is, but they charge you arm and a leg, and it's not free.
I know it's not free, but I don't think it's an arm and a how many tree how many pounds you got?
Well, you know, I've got quite a few down, and my neighbor across the street, I live over off 30 Sharon, and there's branches
now.
Let me ask you, these are
branches down because of the storm last week?
Yes, sir.
Oh, now that raises another issue. If we have a bad storm and tree branches are down, why wouldn't there be a provision to dump them and responsibly, and the homeowner would not be responsible for paying a whole lot of money?
I think there is, and that does not come under the Department of Public Safety. But what we'll do is I'll ask Al Larson, who's here with me today, our communications chief, to look into that. and get back to you.
All right, Steve.
And get that information
out
of the air.
If you would, Steve, if you would hold on and give Chris off the air, don't hang up yet. Chris is going to pick up the phone. Give Chris your name and a number where you can be reached during the day. And the director's staff will get back to you, because it seems to me after an emergency, there ought to be some provision to encourage residents to collect the stuff, or there should have been a note from DPW saying, if you lost a whole lot of tree branches because of the storm, put them out on the curb and we'll come and get them.
I would think so.
All right. Well, hold on and they'll check that out for you, okay?
All righty. Thank you.
And you're doing a thing on Thursday morning down at the field house where people are welcome to hear what you're going to do for 2014.
Absolutely. We're going to talk about 14. We're going to celebrate the successes of our employees in 2013 and tell them where we're going in 14. It's something that our employees wanted to do, and I told them we would certainly do that, and that's going to be at 10 a.m. Everyone's welcome.
10 a.m. down at the Bankers Life Fieldhouse.
Absolutely
free.
Absolutely free.
More exciting than the Pacer Gate. Well, maybe almost as exciting.
Maybe almost.
and see, Valerie was just so quiet because that's important, because the boss was here. Valerie Washington, the Assistant Director of Public Safety, was just been sitting here quietly because the Director of Public Safety was doing his job. Troy Riggs, again, Happy New Year. Thanks very much for being with us.
Amos, thanks for the opportunity. I appreciate it. Good seeing you again.
All right.